And welcome to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. We're brought to you every week by our sponsors, PrecisionHydration.com. Electrolytes in different strengths that match how you sweat. And Precision Fuel 30 gels and drink mixes to give you enough carbohydrate to perform at your best. And get 15% off your first order with the code OxygenAddict15. All right, everybody, welcome to the show. I hope you're all well. We've got a cracking interview lined up for you today. We've got Emma Pallant-Brown back on the show. We've not caught up with her in a couple of years, actually. She's had a really good 2022. She's had three wins over 70.3, three more podiums. So we get to catch up with her and hear about how it was flying backwards and forwards from South Africa to America to race, how the lockdown was for her. Her race at the Collins Cup, and in particular, something that's really interesting is her work with her new coach, Tim Don. It's really obvious when you listen to the interview how much it feels like she's enlivened again with the sport, how working with a new coach has given her almost a new lease of life. And it sounds like Tim's coaching has been really transformational on certainly on her mindset and definitely on her performances as well. So a very interesting listen from that point of view. Tim's a great guy. We've had him on a couple of times as well. And I know him a little bit. And it's great to see someone moving into the coaching world from the elite coaching world who understands, I think Tim's great strength from the sounds of this interview is understanding how an athlete works and the difference that they need mentally to help them move to that next level. Our friend Matt Bottrell has always been saying what an influence Tim has been on him and his performances. And I think it sounds like Tim's personality comes across in the coaching in a way that's really giving confidence to Emma and her performances. So anyway, loads more to come later on with that one. Tune in for that interview. That's really cool. We've had some great racing to talk about this weekend. So that's the first place we're going to kick off the weekend. We've got to start by talking about Ironman Florida. Now, everybody's interest was on the debut Ironman race of Gustav Iden, obviously, two-time Ironman world champion. I was pretty convinced he was going to have a stellar debut at the Ironman distance. And then interviewing Joe Skipper last week or 2 weeks ago, it was interesting getting Joe's take on it, which, and to be fair to Joe, it was a valid point of view, which was that, you know what, Rob, he's not done one yet. It's great to talk about his potential, and I acknowledge he has potential, but he hasn't done an Ironman yet. So yeah, he might be really fast and he might not make it off the end of the bike. Well, Gustav answered those thoughts to anyone else who thought similar. What a debut Ironman performance. Now, first up, let's put this in context. The swim at Florida was incredibly difficult, challenging, choppy, currenty. Tons and tons and tons of age groupers didn't even make the cutoff at Florida. Now, I don't know whether it was just because of the rough conditions and the current or whether it was maybe a bit long, but all of the pro men swam, I would say, in the region of 8 to 10 minutes slower of what we'd expect pro men to be swimming. So at their kind of paces, we're looking at a kind of, and I'm not saying it's long, but it's a kind of 800 meters differential in what you'd expect their times to be. So if you extrapolate that out to an age group who's maybe swimming slower than 2 minutes per 100, and arguably is going to struggle even more with, you know, challenging conditions, choppy water, current, you can see how tough it was for them. So leading men out of the water were out in 58 minutes. I think it would have been reasonable to expect Gustav to swim, you know, 48 to 50 minutes. Sander swam a 58 minutes with him. He's, you know, in perfect conditions, he was a 50-minute swimmer when he did that tri battle. So again, we can see the 8-minute differential for the pro men isn't unreasonable. Gustav took the win, and we'll talk about the details later. 7:42.57. Even including that 10-minute differential. So if you knock those off, and I think it's reasonable to knock 10 minutes off, he would have been 7:32 on debut. Those splits broke down 4:05 on the bike and a 2:34.51 run. Absolutely mind-blowing. I'm going to give a shout-out to Brad Culp, the journalist from Triathlete magazine, who had the best tweet about this. He said, "I'm going to start calling him the kid because that's what we call baby goats." It's an absolutely mind-blowing performance. And I made a joke to some of my athletes the other day. I used to think I was good at triathlon until loads of people took up triathlon, and it turned out I wasn't very good after all. It's just there weren't very many people in the sport when I took it up. With him coming in, that performance on debut, he really could be breaking the overall Ironman world record on his next performance on a fast course or a faster course. And again, Florida's not renowned for being lightning fast on the bike. It had difficult conditions on the day. If he goes and races a Roth, an Austria, Copenhagen, one of those really super fast courses, who knows how fast this kid could be. It's absolutely staggering. Okay, now, interestingly, in his post-race interview, I don't know if any of you saw this, he was asked about his race, and he basically said, I don't want to do another one of these. It was too painful. I hurt too much. Now, whether that's just the post-race, it's what everybody says after an Ironman, isn't it? But we don't hear Lionel Sanders say that after a race. He absolutely loves the pain of an Ironman race. And I was thinking, if I'm a Sanders, if I'm racing him for the win in St. George, or I'm racing him for the win in Kona, or anyone racing him for the win, you know, Jan Frodeno racing him for the win in Kona, would you take some heart from him saying that? Is that him showing a little bit of vulnerability and humanness? Or is it just a spur of the moment comment that he makes after the race? I don't know. What I will say is, what a massive shame that we didn't see that head-to-head race get to play out between him and Jan Frodeno. We know Jan is in amazing shape after his world record earlier this year at the Tri-Battle in Germany. Having the two of them run side by side could have produced, who knows, arguably a few minutes faster. Could it have been the first sub-230 marathon seen at Ironman? I don't know. To put this in context, we basically had Iden and Sanders running side by side for the first 27, 28 kilometers on the run. After that, Sanders faded a bit, and it looked like Iden was just running for the win. You know, he was clearly running well. He didn't fade, but he wasn't pushed over those last 15 kilometers. Sanders, to give him his due, had a stellar race. He produced 4:04 on the bike, and he produced still a 2:40:43 marathon for a 7:48 overall. And if Gustav hadn't been there, I think we'd be sitting here and we would be recognizing, you know, what an amazing end to his season. He's already said his season has ended at least once, to my knowledge, and possibly even twice. He's had some amazing battles this year and finished second in a lot of them. I'll call up his race performances now on the PTO website. All right, let's have a look at the PTO website here for his statistics. So Sanders in 2021, get this. He's had a couple of wins over the 70.3 distance early season. Then he had second to Jan Frodeno in the tri-battle in 7:43. He was second behind Cam Wirth at Ironman Copenhagen with a 7:49. And again, he battled all the way in that one. What an amazing performance. I think he was 7 or 8 minutes down off the bike, and he produced a 2:43 there to close that out. He was ranked 9th overall at the Collins Cup. Then he had a second at Ironman Chattanooga behind Skipper, where he went 7:54, closing with a 2:45 marathon. And now he's finished second overall at Ironman Florida in 7:48 with a 2:40 run. And remember, that's with that really long swim. We've got to give him at least 6 minutes, if not 8 minutes on the swim there. That would have been a 7:40 overall performance. So over the Iron Distance this year, he's had 4 second place finishes. All of them have been sub 8 hours. Three of them have been sub 7:50. What a season for the guy. You've really got a feel for him coming up second in all of those races. And, you know, he is a great guy for the sport. He's entertaining. The YouTube stuff that he puts out, I think some of the things he does, he must do for shock value. And you sit there scratching your head going, why would you do that? But I love the fact that the guy goes out there and races and gives it his all. And you know that he is going to produce performances based on his heart. He's going to race with his heart and produce these performances that arguably he shouldn't be able to produce if we just look at the pure physicality of the guy. I think he's absolutely fantastic for the sport. And I think getting him involved in this race with Gustav pushed him on to that performance. If he hadn't been there, Gustav would have been away to the win, you know, pretty much from the start of the run. So very, very impressive performance from the two of them there. So really, really impressive performances there. Third place in this event was Robert Callen from Sweden. Now, he produced the fastest bike of the day. He rode a 4:03 and he faded on the marathon. He really faded and the guy looked like he was going to fall down at one point. Now, he's a youngster. This was his Ironman debut as well. He went 8:08 on debut, but matched, you know, he was leading off the bike. So a fantastic performance from the lad. He's also coached from the same stable as both Gustav and Lionel, both coached by Gustav's brother, Michael. So he's on my list of people I'm going to try and track down and have a chat to, because he sounds like a very interesting character. A couple of other races here. We had Arnaud Guillaume, the winner of Ironman Wales from a couple of years ago. He finished fourth. Colin Norris from Britain having a bit of a breakthrough there in fifth place as well with an 8:27. So some really great racing. It's awesome to see. I kind of had this feeling that the season was going to peter out, but with the Norwegians announcing that they're racing here at the back end of the season, obviously we've got Christian Blumenfeld, who's racing down at Ironman Cozumel in Mexico in a couple of weeks' time. It's going to be his debut over the Iron Distance, and it'll be brilliant to see how he races as well. So watch this space. Cozumel's another race that can be fast if the conditions are right. It can be very windy. The swim can be really slow or really fast, depending on which way the current's moving. So it'll be interesting to see how he goes. It's a stacked field. When I looked at the field for Cozumel, let's have a look who else is racing over in Cozumel here. On the men's side, we've got Patrick Nielsen. Sebi Keenley is down to race, although he's also down to race South Africa. Michael Weiss, Cam Wirth is down to race. Now, he dropped out of Ironman Florida, having powered along on the bike for the first half. So it'll be interesting to see if he shows up there and looks for another strong performance. Rudy Wild, Arnaud Guillaume's down to race again, although he's obviously doubtful now, having raced. Well, I'm saying that. God knows it's 2 weeks away, so these guys are racing back to back all the time. Peter Heimrich, Andreas Rehlert, Igor Amarelli is down there. We've got another 40 pros before we even get down to the fact we've got Christian Blumenfeld making his pro debut. So, yeah, watch this space. Over on the women's side, hats off here. Heather Jackson took the win. She had, all the women's swim times were slow. She swam a 1:10 and she still produced a sub 9 hour finish. So she went 8:52. Again, knock off 10 minutes there from the swim for her usual swim. She'd have been 8:42. That would have been right up there with the fastest performances of all time. She had a stormer on the bike, 4:37, and then closed it off with a sub 3 marathon. So great to see her running so well. I know there's been all manner of drama going on with her her previous Watty Inc. team. So it's great to see her coming out racing so strongly. Sky Mensch takes out second place, and Laura Zimmerman takes third place there. So really storming performances, and great to see some real interest. You know, the triathlon season now for us doesn't really finish, does it? As people who are fans of the sport, we've got races happening from the first weeks of January in the Middle East all the way through to the last weeks of November, races in Australia in December. It's fantastic. Now then, over into the Middle East again, we're going to talk about the ITU race that happened in Abu Dhabi. So it's confusing to get your head around what's happening here with the ITU ranking points. This is a race that counts for the ranking points for next season. So effectively, even though it's in 2021, it's the first scoring points. Maybe it's even the second scoring points. I think it's the second scoring points, isn't it, for the 2022 season? God knows, I can't even keep up. But points were on the line for sure. We'll start with kicking off with the ladies' race. Very, very strong performance again from Flora Duffy. It's been her year, hasn't it? She absolutely stamped her authority all over this race. She was 10 seconds or so down out the swim. She closed the gap. Swim was interesting, actually. It was very broken up. We had very strong performances on the swim from both Jess Learmonth and from Sophie Caldwell. Really broke the swim up, considering especially that it was over the sprint distance. So the two of them powered away. We had a lead pack of four or five formed on the bike. And then Duffy rode up into the pack and then she ran away from everybody. So she took the win ahead of GTB, another strong performance from her. Georgia Taylor Brown of Great Britain taking second, and another podium for Sophie Caldwell. She took the bronze in WTS Leeds earlier in the year. So great to see her coming through. She's really putting herself, you know, stamped her name right up there. But the challenge here for the Great Britain selectors, in the top 12, we had seven Brits. Imagine that, you're seventh Brit and you're not even making the top six, the top 12. So we had GTB in second, Sophie Caldwell in third, Jess Learmonth in fourth. We have Beth Potter in seventh, Non Stanford in eighth, Vicky Holland in 10th, and Lucy Charles Barkley with another great performance over the short distance for her. I think she found that the tight nature of the bike handling, you know, tricky, and that's going to be the big challenge for her. She's really going to get punished on those really tight, windy courses. But again, she's finished 12th in the world. What a standout performance. It's unbelievable that only gets a seventh Brit. So really impressive racing from her. She has had the most unbelievable season when you think of everything that she's done with that performance she put in to win the 70.3 Worlds in St. George and finishing top 12 in a WTCS race to round out the season. You know, she has got to be putting in the claim for strongest triathlete of the year, surely. Now, over on the men's side, very interesting win here for Yellow Jeans from Belgium. He missed out on the Olympics, if you remember. I believe it was... was it a COVID positive for him, I think, that caused him to miss out over on the over at the Olympics? Yeah, that's right. He had a COVID-19 positive test that meant he couldn't start at the Tokyo Olympics. So he took out the run with a really strong run, ran away from everybody. Notable again, Vincent Louis from France, he takes out the second place. He struggled with injury as well and didn't have the season that he wanted. If you think back, he was everybody's nailed-on favourite to win at the Olympics before those injury problems scuppered his chances. So great to see him coming back really strong. And in third place, we had Bence Bizacz from Hungary taking that out. Another notable, say, Tyler Mislachuk from Canada came back with a sixth place. Another great performance from Vasco Valacha from Portugal. Had him on the show a few episodes ago. If you want to go back and listen to him, I was really hoping he was going to come through and have a great race at the Olympics, and he didn't get picked for Portugal in the end, but he's definitely a name for the future. Hayden Wild, Olympic bronze medalist, he was down in eighth place. So some great racing there. So yeah, awesome stuff for us as fans of the sport. Now then, a little bit of tech news for you. I've not done much tech news, but something has piqued my interest here. For those of you who are a big fan of the new bike releases coming through, if you go over and check out the Quintana Roo website, Quintana Roo are obviously sponsors of Joe Skipper. They've released their new superbike. The new superbike is called the VPR. And something that's really interesting about this bike, it's got the usual claims of it's faster than every other bike, and fair enough, you know, these days every bike's going to claim that. However, QR have got a couple of interesting things that they've brought to my attention. First up, it's the lightest superbike at the moment compared to the other superbikes around. It's about 0.2 of a pound lighter than a Cervelo P5, which is already about a pound lighter than the other superbikes out there. So if you compare it to the Canyon Speedmax, for example, it's very nearly a pound lighter than those bikes. So QR, traditionally not known for being a lightweight bike manufacturer, they've got a great tri history. Obviously, they were started as the original triathlon bike company way back in the late 80s by the guy who started Slow Twitch, Dan Empfield. Now, the thing that's really interesting about this bike is it doesn't come with any sort of custom-built handlebars or custom-built hydration. It uses stock stuff, so they've got Profile Design and Vision and stuff like that. But rather than having buying the bike and then having to go to a custom fitter, having the hydraulic hoses cut to fit you and all that kind of stuff, and you might remember me talking about this when I bought my Cervelo, The hydraulic hoses on hydraulic disc brakes make it a real challenge to be able to make your bike fit out of the box. Even if you know your own fit coordinates, you've got to be able to remove the hydraulic hoses, cut them to length. You know, you might remember me telling you it was such a drama getting the handlebars off and getting the hydraulic hoses routed through the Cefalo that I bought. There's no way I could have done it on my own. Even the brilliant mechanic that I use really struggled with this, to get the hoses in, you know, back in and back out again of the handlebars. It was a epic that I won't go into. If you know your fit coordinates already in terms of stack and reach, Quintana Roo will build this to your exact coordinates. So it'll arrive not only, you know, it's not just a case of getting the saddle to the right height, but in terms of getting the bar stack the right height, the aero bar pads in the right place, you know, X and Y coordinates, but it'll come with the hoses already pre-cut to the right length. So you haven't got 6 inches of hydraulic hose sticking out of the side of your superbike catching the wind, which is amazing. So go and check it out. I think it's something, it's always been a challenge, I think, as new bikes come out. We all love the new tech, but I think with our hand on our hearts, we all take it with a pinch of salt. Every bike is always 10 watts faster at 30 miles an hour than every other superbike that's ever come out, isn't it? And it's hard to believe at this point that bikes aren't basically riding themselves. If every bike gets 10 watts faster or 10 watts less drag every time a new one comes out, we should be approaching the point where bikes are essentially like the DeLorean from Back to the Future and they're invisible to the wind. I think manufacturers are going to have to find something that they can do to keep us interested and make them unique. I've always loved QR as a brand, going back with all the history. I've had a couple of their bikes in the past and loved them. This is something that for me would make me go, do you know what? I know my fit coordinates. I've had an X and Y fit. You know, Matt Bottrell's put me in a really great position. I'm super comfy in it. Having it delivered in the box, with all the parts on, with the hoses already fitted and cut, so that I get it out of the box and it's ready to ride, that would be something that for me, after my previous experience of a, you know, a superbike getting delivered and it being about, honestly, probably 6 weeks before I even got to ride the damn thing, that's something that would turn my head next time around. So other manufacturers, the gauntlet I think has been laid down here by Quintana Roo. Go over and check it out. Okay, good. Great chat there about races, great chat about Ironmans, great chat about new tech that's coming through. If you've got any thoughts about this, we'll put the Instagram post up, put your thoughts up. I'll share some pictures later on of this new superbike, and I'll be interested to get your listeners' thoughts over on Instagram. We're going to be making more of an attempt to engage over on Instagram. It's something that I'm quite enjoying. I'm following different Instagram channels recently and really enjoying using it as a way of finding out new triathlon news. So we're going to start trying to contribute to this as well. So go over and find the Instagram post. I'll start on this, and I look forward to hearing your thoughts on that. Okay, before we go to this week's interview of the week, I want to give a shout out to our longtime sponsors, Precision Hydration. I was thinking before I recorded this, this is episode 359. So we're coming up to, it must be nearly 7 years, wasn't it? It was December of 2014 when we started the show. So 7 years worth of the podcast, which is pretty mind-blowing in itself. Actually, I'll look up the date we started, actually, and start thinking about that. 7 years, man. Wow. But Precision Hydration have been with me as sponsors of this show for pretty much all of that time. It was within the first year they started sponsoring roles of the show. They just started as a company back then. Obviously now they are massively established. You'll hear in this interview with Emma Pallant Brown how much the work that they've done with her to help her get on top of, you know, she's got a massive sweat rate. She's not a particularly salty sweater, but she's an incredibly high rate sweater. And the hydration stuff is something that ruined her early races. You know, she was leading a race in the early days at 70.3 distance and collapsed on the run with a massive lead. And her getting her hydration sorted out, as you'll hear, has been one of the key parts of her big performance. And you'll hear her talk in the interview about how not only does she know how much she needs to drink, what the concentration of the electrolytes she needs to drink is, she also knows exactly how many grams of carbs she needs to take per hour. And she trains with the products as well. especially in her big race simulation sessions. Now, obviously, you don't need to be training with, you know, gels every 20 minutes in every workout you do. That would be ridiculous all through the winter. But especially as you're approaching your key race, it becomes more and more important to train your gut to have the same fueling that you're going to have in your A race. So I'm getting all my athletes, they will be taking the same fuel if they're on Precision Fuel 30 gels and drink mixes. That's what they'll be taking in increasing amounts in their workouts as they approach their A race. And in the race simulation workouts, they'll be using exactly the products at exactly the same times, so they know that there's going to be no surprises come race day. And that's exactly what new coach Tim Don has been getting Emma to do in her training. And you'll hear her say it's made that extra few percent of difference from her that's gone from taking her from being one of the top five in the world to winning these races. And I encourage you to do the same, especially during the winter. Get on top of your hydration in particular. If you're there on the turbo all the time or you're on the treadmill, you're going to be more hot than usual. You're going to need to get your electrolyte balance to get your fluid balance right. So if you don't know about this stuff, Precision Hydration can help you out for free. On their website, you can take the free online sweat test. It'll give you a lead as to whether a very salty or very heavy sweater or just what your sweat rate is. You can also book a free 20-minute hydration and fueling video consultation with them. Again, no strings attached. The team are awesome over at PH and they'll do this for you. And you can also use on their website the quick carb calculator that'll give you a lead to how many grams of carbs you and your body size need for the events that you're doing and the training that you're doing. Okay, you can even use the code OxygenAddict15 to get 15% off your first order of electrolytes and fuel from them. Okay, so without further ado, let's go over to our interview of the week with Emma Pallant-Brown. Emma, welcome back onto the show. It's lovely to get a chance to have a chat with you again. How are you doing today?
Cool, yeah. Great to be on here. Thank you so much for having me. And it's been a good day so far.
It's been a good day. It's been a good year. I'm very jealous. I'm looking in the background and we've got bright sunshine over there. I presume you're in South Africa still, right?
Yes, I am. Yeah, it's been really nice and sunny. It's coming into summer. So I think I've timed it right getting back home.
Yeah, awesome stuff. Well, I'm very jealous. We've actually got a bit of sun here today for the first time in forever, which is lovely. It's been dark and belting it down recently. Anyway, let's talk about your year. I've got the very comprehensive PTO website up in the background here, which is making my job a lot easier recently. And I tell you what, there's a lot of first, second, and third place podiums on your little list of races this year. You've had a cracker, haven't you?
Yeah, it's been a really good year, especially I think at the start of the year, we were kind of like, oh, like, how is this year going to go? How much are we going to be able to travel? How much are we going to be able to race? And it was that thing of, I've never really had an American season, and we threw everything at that, kind of a couple of trips, three trips over there, which is a bit of a mission from South Africa. But it was worth it in the end. I'm really happy with the season.
So how were things in general then with being able to travel? I mean, I know a lot of pro athletes get travel exemptions and stuff, and that maybe makes it feel a bit different, but so let's start with that. How has it been firstly for you trying to train and then trying to travel to race around all the COVID restrictions that have happened over the past year and a half or so?
Yeah, I think it was, so the lockdown here was pretty intense. We kind of, weren't allowed out for, I think it was 6 weeks in the end. So heaps of garage training and, my first race at the beginning of the year was here. PTO kind of realized that it was hard to travel from Africa and put on a race, supported a race here. And then it was literally getting the PTO exemption to travel to America. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to get the races in because even with the kind of travel exemption from a race, to go to Europe was just hit and miss. Like, so many people were getting turned back, and that was the last thing you ever want before a race.
Yeah. And in terms of the races that you did do, I'm going to kick off with an overview of the season and give everybody a picture. You had wins at 70.3 Florida, the Rev 3 Williamsburg, 70.3 Boulder. You had second places in Des Moines and 70.3 California, thirds in St. George and in the Collins Cup, which we'll well, third ranked, I guess, is probably a more accurate way of describing that for the Collins Cup. And we'll come to that. And rounding out the season with the fifth place at the Ironman 70.3 World Championships. And I'm going back, like we had you on the show way back in the day. And back then, you were not really even considering yourself as a triathlete. It was really, I think, the first time we spoke, you were like, yeah, well, I'm just kind of getting into this swimming thing. And you were obviously a blistering duathlete. Things have changed a little bit, haven't they, since then? Do you ever get to sit back and reflect that, you know, once not so very long ago, you didn't even really consider yourself to be a triathlete?
Yeah, and I think that's kind of crept up on me mainly this season, I think. I kind of, last year, a little bit with the lockdown and the COVID, I was kind of just doing my own thing. I didn't really have a coach. And I kind of went back to a lot of my run programs and was really like, yeah, hammering the running on the treadmill. And I felt like I got in really good run form and then raced at the end of the year in Daytona. And yeah, being a good runner in a triathlon is not what it's all about. And yeah, then I realized, okay, I've really got to kind of go back to getting a coach, doing this properly. And I'd say this year is the first time I've really kind of felt more like a triathlete than a runner. I kind of, yeah, Tim's just given me more confidence. I got a new coach, Tim Don, and he's kind of made me think, like, rather than just wait for the run and then like see what I could do, he's kind of given me more confidence, I guess, in using my own data on the bike, knowing what I can do on the bike, and actually putting that into a race and being like, okay, I'm going to lose a bit of time on the swim, but I'm not afraid to just bike on my own and see how far I can get up the fields before the run even. So yeah, I definitely feel more like a triathlete these days, which is a good thing, I guess.
Has the partnership with Tim been a big part in the changing bike sponsors to work with Specialized? Because I know Tim's been a Specialized athlete forever, hasn't he? Whenever I've talked to him, he's always raving about the Shiv, and you know, he's in love with those bikes. Was that a big part of it, or any part of it?
So yeah, actually, it's a total coincidence. It was kind of one of those things. Okay. I signed with Specialized, a couple of months before kind of I knew that I was going to start this season, and that was already signed up going into Daytona. And then when I had done Daytona, that's when I kind of had the thought, okay, I need a coach. And my husband, Jared, used to be coached by Tim, and he was like, listen, I think you and Tim are so different. You're going to balance each other. You're going to get like the best of both of you if you work together. And I just think you're going to work really well together. So again, I didn't really think Tim would necessarily have time. Like I knew he was doing a lot with the Paralympics and also obviously still racing himself. I kind of thought I'd put my name there and if he could consider me at some point. But yeah, he was up for the challenge. So it kind of hit off in January, which was awesome.
And has he managed to bring on your confidence in your swimming as much as your actual physical swimming? It sounds as though he's had a real sort of mental effect on you as much as anything.
Yeah, I think especially so the confidence on the bike has definitely been, I feel like I don't really feel the need to sit back on the bike as much now, and I kind of believe in my biking a little bit more. And the swimming, I think the same, like I always think I'm all out in the swim, like I'm giving it everything in the swim because I can't hold back. And I think, again, he's taught me to maybe like slow down, like not everything is full blast. Like my easy is my easy on my swim even, which my swimming was kind of all at one pace. And yeah, he's put points where you just go easy, you feel the water, you relax, you're thinking of cues. And then my faster becomes faster. So having that change of pace, whereas I don't think I used to have any range in swimming. So yeah, that's definitely helped my swim.
Was it a surprise, 70.3 Florida back in April of this year? It looked, and again, I'm only looking from the outside, but when I saw those first results, I was like, wow, she's way up there in the swim. Like that's, it felt like a jump in performance had happened. Was it a surprise for you where you were? And that wasn't meant as an insult. I hope it didn't come across that way, but it looked like you'd made that step change that, you know, triathletes who are not from a swimming background dream about. And I was talking with Joe Skipper yesterday, and he was saying the same thing, man, It's fine being the fastest athlete on dry land, but if I could just get the swim to the next level. How did it feel at Florida then, getting out of the water and looking around and working out where you were?
Yeah, I think it was one of those things of it was a very, I know, like my program was so, so different to anything that I'd been doing before. And also the year before, there was a long period of time that I was out of the water and simply land training, which I actually think slowed me down, like got me more strength, better on my technique. And I definitely felt better in training in the water going in, and I kind of knew my times were better. But you still don't know in a race, in open water, how much of a difference that's actually going to be in the race scenario. And I think, yeah, it was almost a bit of a shock. Like I was looking around for people, and when I was getting bike splits, I thought, no way, like I'm not leading this early into a race. And
were you second out of the water?
Yeah, I think I was.
Awesome.
And it was a non-wetsuit, and well, someone had actually told me that there were alligators in there, so I think that kind of helped with that swim. That made me go a bit faster. But yeah, I think it's one of those things that you reflect on afterwards. You look back through and you're like, okay, yeah, like things are actually going as well as I hope they had been in training.
Yeah, cool. All right, so next big race then was probably 70.3 St. George. Thoughts going into that and your thoughts actually during the race? You were third overall at the finish, but that often doesn't reflect how things played out during the race.
Yeah, I think it was one of those that was, because we knew it was going to be the course for the Worlds, like we definitely wanted to have a good hit out from it. Florida was so humid. I had 2 weeks between, but we just weren't sure how my body was going to pull up in that first week after. And I think, yeah, Tim holding me back and also really getting on top of my nutrition and hydration, which was super, super key, especially for like in Florida, I was walking the aid stations, which before Tim, I would never even have considered, which is probably why a few of the hot races I didn't finish. But it was one of those things of I had a lot of confidence from Florida. I kind of felt like my body had done things and coped with things that maybe it wouldn't have previously. At St. George, I was really up for it because it attracted such a strong field. You kind of felt, okay, now I'm really going to get an idea of where I'm kind of against the best in the world, especially with Daniela being there. you then know where you stand.
Well, I was going to say, like looking at the baseline facts there, you were only, I don't know, just slightly over a minute down on Daniela coming out of the water. That's a game changer, isn't it, in terms of she's got to be the marker for, you know, that's going to be the front of the race come the end of the run. Being so close to her, I think, has changed your dynamic entirely, hasn't it?
Yeah. And I think also, again, being super surprised, other than Daniela, who had put in so much time on the bike, kind of hitting that hill, being in second place and biking kind of through some of the girls, like obviously I know Holly's so strong on the bike. And I think I kind of then knew that I'd moved up in my swim, and then having gone hard on the bike was actually paying off. And it was just one of those races where I think I felt like I was progressing in all of the parts rather than just one element. I felt like more of an overall athlete.
Yeah, very much so. And I mean, to put it in perspective, you put what, 3 or 4 minutes into Holly on the bike, and you're already one of the fastest runners in the field. So it's a very sort of well-rounded triathlete's performance, isn't it?
Yeah, it was good. And actually, the funny thing was, the one thing I wasn't happy with was my run. And I'd stopped for the toilet halfway round, and I just hadn't felt myself. And that's kind of a good place for me to be coming out from a race, because I kind of know that, yeah, that's an area that we're not afraid to work.
Yeah, cool. Listen, let me go back a bit. I want to ask you again about the nutrition and the hydration part, because I think that's really important. If a pro triathlete at the very top of the game is slowing down and walking the aid stations to make sure they take on fluid and calories, then there's something here for age groupers to really take notice of. So what changes has Tim made then to make you think, okay, well, that's something I need to alter?
Yeah, I think it's the practicality of, I've been working with Precision Hydration now for a couple of years, and they've really, we've kind of found a really good strategy of pre-race loading during the race and even after the race, that's straight into the recovery bottle. And I think having those numbers were like great. And I hadn't really put them practically into a race as well. I think I could have executed them better a couple of years ago. And Tim was kind of making me aware of, okay, how can you have that on your bike? How are we going to make sure that you're taking all of that in? How are we going to measure it? And how are you basically going to black and white stick to the plan? I don't know, I just have this mentality on the run that I never want to slow down. I never want to stop. And I was missing so much of the hydration stations. And it was something he said to me beforehand, like, you need to, I don't care if you walk through them, like, you need to get the stuff in. This is going to be a game changer at the end of the race. And it's what, again, then Precision Hydration after each race, they've kind of, I've told them everything that I've taken in, and we've gone through each strategy and we've gone through all my numbers. And even within the races where I think that I've stuck perfectly to the plan, you then go and review it with your team afterwards. And I'll be like, okay, I was a little bit less there, or I was a little bit, and it's just made me so aware of, like, I feel more professional, the nutrition aspect. And it does, it makes such an end. That last 5K on the run, that's when you know. And of all my kind of data that Precision Hydration have sent me afterwards, the Worlds is where I really mucked up my nutrition. And it's only looking back at it and being able to now compare everything. And then you realize, okay, that really, really affects a race. And
yeah,
all elements can go into that. It can go into pushing too hard, like being too focused, being too nervous, dropping a bottle. Like, there's so many things, but nutrition should always be at kind of the forefront of a long distance race.
Do you know, it's so interesting that you talk about doing it like this, because this is exactly what we do with our age group athletes as well. And we make them write it down and plan out not just how much you're going to have per hour, but how are you going to carry it, where are you going to take it, how are you going to mix the extra sachets in. All of that stuff is so, so important, because it's almost like the first level is realizing you need to do it, but the second level is actually doing the thing you planned you're going to do.
Yeah.
And if you don't review afterwards, you don't ever realize whether you have or haven't done it. And often that's just the key that makes people go, oh, okay, right. Well, I plan to, it's as fundamental as bike power, isn't it? I plan to ride at 200 watts and I rode at 250 for the first hour. Well, no surprise, you exploded. It's the same exact thing with your electrolytes and getting your hydration right.
Yeah. And it's one of those things, again, and this is what I've really learned from Tim, of even on the long ride. So I have my race products, but I wasn't always training on them. And in my key sessions and in my longer sessions, Tim would say, okay, carry those sachets of pH in your back pocket. So when you refill, you're not just refilling with water. Like, we want to be training hard on these products, because then your stomach and your gut become so used to it, it's going to absorb it in the best way. And it's kind of training in the nutrition, as well as, it's not just race day. These are my like race specials. And all the rest of the time I'm eating sweets and I'm eating this, like, yeah, to get me through the rides because they taste nice. It's like, no. Okay. This is training in this, yeah, it really makes a difference.
Yeah, very much so. So have you had the advanced sweat test done with pH? Have they done the thing where they measure your sodium?
Yes, at London Triathlon, actually, I did it. Yeah.
It's a very cool process, isn't it? Would you mind, can I ask you, would you share your numbers, or is that, do you want to keep it private? Because if you do, that's totally cool.
Yes, I have them all down somewhere in a thing. I can put them notes afterwards.
Cool, that'd be awesome to know, because I went and had an in-person test with Andy Dunn back at Ironman UK in 2015, and he was saying to me, like, I'm a really salty sweater, I sweat 1600 milligrams, no one's as salty as me. And then he did the test and went, oh, apart from you, you're as salty as I am. So I'm in exactly the same position, that if I don't replace that stuff, it was like a game changer for me to go, not only do I need to take salt tablets, but I need to, I was something like four times more salt tablets than I thought I needed to even stay level. So it was such a massive deal to get that right, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think the results aren't always what you expect, because I sweat so much and I always just assumed, like, the more electrolytes, the better, like, I need loads of salt because I can see salt on my suit and I'm just a really heavy sweater. But the concentration wasn't as high as, like, my sweat rate was really high.
Right.
But the concentration wasn't as high as I had just, yeah, predicted from just the,
That's
yeah.
That's interesting. So you lose loads of fluid, but not as much sodium relatively. And I'm the opposite. I don't lose that much fluid, but tons of salt. So, yeah. They're such a good company, aren't they? They're such a nice bunch of men and women and just love them.
Brad's out in America and was at some of the races. And yeah, it's a real proper team, and anything they can do to help. And they love that scientific part, which if you can have the numbers and be more objective about your performance, it does make a massive difference.
Yeah. It really does. And they're even offering, I don't know if you know this, but they're doing free hydration consultations for listeners of the podcast as well. Just like do it. Put the link in the show notes. We'll get them to phone us up. So anyone who's listening, who's into this, can just phone up and have a 20-minute consultation and just get it all dialed in. So that's great. I'm loving that you're working with them, and I'm loving it's working so well for you. Let's go a little bit forward through your year, because something that was really interesting for me was the 70.3 race in Boulder. Typically, really strong field out in America at 70.3 Boulder. Second half of your season. So what were your thoughts going into this one?
Yeah, it was kind of that time where I had, we'd committed to, we'd been like back from America. We'd done a couple of weeks in America at the beginning of the season, like we said, and then we came back, we trained a bit in South Africa. Then I did some more races. And then the plan was like, you can't keep going back and forth. And especially with the jet lag and the time zones in, we're like, okay, we're just going to base ourselves in Boulder. It's a great place to train. Jared's been there for loads of years. We had an awesome homestay, and he wasn't actually going to come out. And then lockdown came to South Africa again. So he, flew quickly out. And we just had a really good, like, couple of months build into a race. And again, that was something that Tim was very much like, you love racing, you race a lot, and that's great. But sometimes we need to have a block where you're not doing any races. We just really put down a real consistent big block, and we can hit a race hard after that. And that was our period of, not racing, just stay in one place, train hard. And I loved it. I really did. And I felt, I don't know, you're always nervous though, because you feel great going into a race, but it doesn't mean anything necessarily. And I hadn't qualified for the Collins Cup. So I also knew that it was kind of all or nothing on that race. If I had to do a really good performance to get enough points to make the Europe team. So, and even then it was only going to be a captain's pick. So yeah, I felt the pressure on, and I feel like I thrived on it a bit. So it was good fun.
It looks like you had a really good head-to-head with Taylor Nibb, who I think that was her first 70.3, and she was, had she just raced the Olympics at that point? I think she just come back, hadn't she?
Yeah.
So you ended up having a really good ding-dong with her. What were your impressions of racing her?
Yeah, it was good. I think it was one of those things, she was literally like 2 weeks or something back from the Olympics, and I could see she had, like, a lot of us were training at the same place, and you could just see she had that fire in her belly of not having the Olympic performance that she knew she could have had. She was like looking forward to. And I think sometimes that's a really good time to race, when you feel that fire, you feel like I had more in me and I didn't get it out there. When I heard she was on a road bike, I didn't think it would be as competitive as she was. And yeah, I was really seriously, seriously impressed. I knew she put a lot of time into me on the swim. And then I thought we'd just reel her in on the bike. And there was one point, Ginny Seymour Metzler is one of her training partners. So I know those two knew each other quite well. And me and Ginny were being like a bit tactical on the bike, because we both kind of, I think we're saving it for the run. And I thought, okay, if she's not chasing Taylor hard, she must know that she can run a bit of time into her. So I kind of took the the vibe from her, and we didn't overbike, but we didn't manage to reel her in. So I think she still had a pretty good lead on the run. And then it was, a really good battle.
Nice. Well, you mentioned that the selection, the captain's pick for the Collins Cup. Tell us a bit about the experience of going to the Collins Cup, because obviously it was the inaugural event. Everyone was really excited for it. Unfortunately, there were no big crowds there, but watching it on the TV internet coverage made it look like it, that was the only thing that was missing, was massive crowds, and it could just be the Ryder Cup of Triathlon. What was your experience like there?
Yeah, definitely. I really feel that. I really feel that it is awesome for the sport. And it reminds me of when I was a junior and you would fight so hard to make that GB cross-country team, especially for the European champs, like GB junior girls. We were always winning the Euro champs, and you had to fight so hard to get into that team, and you were against all these girls. But then when you made the team, you're suddenly all teammates and you all become like really good friends, and you're like supporting each other and you're helping each other and you're on the same team and you're all going for that gold. And I feel like it was the same thing here. Like we're fighting for those top kind of six spots that was hard to get into our team. But then when we're there, we really felt like a team, and you don't get like a lot of chances in triathlon to represent kind of like your continent and be part of such a strong team. And I think as well, it made each other more human. Like, you know, your rivals and you, but you don't necessarily spend a lot of time with them. But to all be in one tent kind of before a race, and yeah, you just see what each other do, and you're genuinely supporting each other. It was, for me, it was really good fun.
Yeah, it looked really good. It looked on the coverage, it looked like there was that genuine team spirit amongst, you know, nations, well, not nations, but teams wanted to beat each other for sure and support each other. Did it give you a bit of an insight into racing? You know, you got Kat Matthews, Lucy, Charles Barkley there as well. Did it give you a bit of an insight ahead of the, obviously, I think everyone had one eye on the 70.3 Worlds that were coming up a few weeks later. Did you have any thoughts of, oh, she might race like this or that in St. George at the Worlds off the back of that?
Yeah. So, and I actually said this to Jared because, we obviously, you talk before a big race, kind of, you talk about how you feel and things. And the two names that I really thought, so I saw what Lucy did at European Champs, and you shed a new coach. And I was just like, I really think Lucy's going to be dangerous. And then also with Daniela, again, I saw what she did at St. George. I thought that course really suits her. And both of them not having the race that they wanted at Collins Cup, I kind of, again, I talk about that fire in the belly. I thought they're going to come out like all guns blazing at the Worlds and we're in for a lot of danger. And I kind of, I was so impressed with Lucy's performance. I think she really, and again, I think if you look at actually the rankings of the fastest times in the Collins Cup, I think you can see who your kind of fighting
rivals are. Yeah.
And I think it gave a really good idea of what shape people are in.
Yeah. So again, the five names there, it's Lucy, there's Jeannie Metzler, there's Taylor Nibb, Kat Matthews, and you going head to head again. It looks like you and Kat are kind of, you know, cat and mouse, if you'll pardon the pun, backwards and forwards. Were you surprised at all by the way the race played out on that day? I mean, everyone I've spoken to has basically said Lucy's performance was probably the most complete triathlon performance certainly we've seen this year. What were your feelings actually in the race on race day?
Yeah, 100%. I think you can't fault for Lucy A to swim away from someone like Taylor, like amazing for her to then bike that much into everyone. Again, amazing. And her run was rapid on that course. It was I really don't think you can fault it. And there's no point where you can say, I think it really was, like you say, that all round triathlon. And, really set the standard for all of us. And I think on the day, my performance, I definitely wouldn't have thought I had the race that I had. I think I was further back on the swim than I'd felt really good in Boulder. And then, I didn't have my best swim. But like I'm used to that, I kind of just was ready to bike hard no matter what. And I made a lot of gains in the first bit of the bike and then caught that kind of lead pack, if you like, that didn't include Lucy and Taylor were up the road, but everyone else. And then again, I think it was very tactical and it was very, I don't know, I felt like everyone was really on edge, which again, I'm not that used to being in a group and seeing each other like that, so that close to the run. And then on the run, I thought, because I've saved my bikes on, my legs on the bike, that I was going to have a good run. And again, I totally was shocked when I got off, and I felt like I had nothing. And hey, some of the races like that happens. And I guess, just more fuel for next year.
I'll tell you what, if you can finish fifth at the Worlds on a day when your run legs don't show up, it's not a bad performance, Em.
Yeah. Yeah, it's solid. It wasn't a disaster, but it leaves you hungry for more, I guess.
Cool. And I guess that brings us around to 70.3 California, last race of the season. You got the silver there. Is that your season done now?
Yeah. So I came back from, the plan was going to be probably that after the Worlds, I'd come back, recover, and then start a build up and race Daytona. Then PTO put out about having supporting LA Triathlon, and I said to Jared, I was like, and again, it was hard for him because we'd planned like to do some fun stuff with the team and to have some real chilled weeks. And I was like, you know what? I need to race again. Like, I don't want to finish. I don't want to go into this big block just coming off that world performance. Like, I feel like I've got so much more in me. And I was like, if I do LA Triathlon, I can then the week after do Oceanside. And then that's flying like one more time to America, but getting to do two races. And I had to persuade Tim as well that it was a good idea. And we all came to a compromise of, okay, I can do that if I then don't go back over for Daytona. Because at some point there needs to be a 2022 build and a couple of weeks down before that. So yeah, the plan, they kind of agreed to that. So we've decided not to do Daytona. And I flew back and I did, I'm not sure if you've heard of Cape Cycle Tour. It's like a race here.
Yeah.
It's quite a big event here. And it's like the first big thing since COVID. And Jared and his family have like a tradition to do it. So we flew there I think it was 2 weeks before LA. And I did the elite women's race. And six of us broke away, got into a sprint finish, touched handlebars, and had a pretty nasty fall.
Oh no, really?
Yeah, that was a bit of a, so then, going from having all this, like, I'm ready to race and I'm ready. And then I was like, oh no, I had a week where everything was sore. Yeah, I couldn't train properly. And I just compare that end to the season, having just done those two races and getting a first and second and being super proud of those performances, and comparing that to going into the Worlds where I felt like I was in my best shape ever and not coming away with the performance, I really don't think you can ever predict it. And I think as long as you're willing to give everything that you have on the day to a race, then you never know what can happen.
You're not doing anything for triathletes' bike handling reputation amongst cyclists. Touching handlebars.
So many people have said that. They're like, oh, these triathletes coming into these road races.
Oh dear. So looking forward to next year then, what do you have planned coming up?
Yeah, so I think the good thing about taking a little bit of a break and starting my build up early now for 2022 means that I can race a bit earlier in the season. Waiting for the list to come out, but I think the first kind of thing will be a Dubai or a Bahrain if they're kind of early season. And then I think I would really like to go back to do some European races before going to, obviously the world's being back in America, I'll do an American stint as well. But I miss Europe, hey. I want to get back over there, and it's a lot easier to fly and with the time zones from South Africa. So I think the big goal will be the PTO races and the kind of 70.3 Worlds. If I can do World Duathlon, I would also love to do that again. I guess, again, lots of racing, but maybe making sure I do it smartly and to have those good blocks in between the races. So not just go race.
Nice. Hey, well, look, it sounds like, if anything, your enthusiasm for the sport is building rather than anything else. You can really see that in the way that you talk, that you're really like excited about next year and excited about the changes that Tim's brought into your program. And it's been great to see your progress this year, and it's every reason to think it'll continue into next year as well. So yeah, we'll leave it there. Thanks very much for your time. It's been great hearing all the stories, and we wish you all the best for 2022. Hey.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, thanks for the podcast as well.
All right. Cracking interview with Emma there. It's great to catch up with her. It's great to see her having such a good year. And also, I hope that it's like a real world example of how getting your hydration strategy, getting your electrolytes and fluid balance sorted, getting the right amount of calories in, and most importantly, practicing that in training, practicing it in your key races, practicing with the actual products you're going to be using on race day, can make that difference. Now, in Emma's case, it makes a difference possibly between missing the podium and being on it, being on the podium and winning. But for the rest of us, as age groups, it can make the difference between having an awful race and a great race, possibly between not getting a PB and getting a PB, even between, you know, not finishing a race and finishing the race. So it's something to really think about for next year. You obviously don't have to start training with those specific gels and bars and things right now, but and certainly you don't need to do it in every single event. But if you start to get an idea for the brands that work for you, the products that work for you, the things that settle well in your stomach, and the things that don't, most importantly, to avoid those ones that don't, it can make just a few of those things that worry you in your head, it can take those worries away, and knowing that you've got those things in your back pocket sorted for next year. I can still remember using a certain brand of energy bar, we'll say, during a race for the first time, you know, in the early days, just picking one up from the aid station, and it really didn't agree with me, having really bad stomach cramps for about half an hour afterwards, just because of trying a new energy bar that was given out at the aid station. And I assumed, oh, well, this is a big brand, it'll work well. Little did I know back then that these things can be very, very different and have very different effects on your own individual gut. So something that you can get sorted really easily and work on during the winter to take away some of those potential worries for next season. Now, something a little bit different. I want to give some shout outs to members of the team that we coach for some of their performances this week. Now, this week, last week, has in our block training plan, traditionally for a lot of our athletes who've raced in the summer, we've said, right, have some downtime during September, October. A lot of our athletes raced at Bowood or Outlaw X. They've taken a lot of downtime during October. So they've still kept training, but there's not been very much, if any, high intensity work. It's much more of been a just keep yourself moving and really take some downtime. And then we'll focus on starting the winter block as we come into November. Now, more and more as the race season extends, a surprising number of our athletes have raced late all the way through into October and are still on their end of season break. And that's fine. But we've got a whole ton of our athletes who've done their baseline tests this week, and they've got a really clear idea of where they're kicking off their season from. So that's two things for you. Firstly, I'd really encourage you to take that break. Have 4 weeks or so where you've got some downtime from the getting up early, have to get to the pool early. Really make it that season's over, and then get ready for this season starting. And then do yourself a set of baseline tests so you know where you're at with your bike fitness, your run fitness, and your swim fitness going into the season. We'll typically measure every 8 weeks or so during the winter, maybe a little bit more frequently going into the summer. Then we can see the progress that you're making. And you know that all these interval sessions on the bike or the treadmill or the pool are having a positive effect on your training. So we've done some baseline testing this week. And the first thing I've said to all our athletes is, look, expect to go into these baseline tests with lower levels than you were at in your peak fitness back at the season. Now, typically, the numbers people are comparing them to are the FTP test they'll have done a few weeks before their A race. So that was absolute peak fitness, and now we're taking a base level. It stands to reason, although reason is never a big part of this, your number is going to be lower now than it was at peak fitness. it can be really frustrating to think we don't make constant progress forwards, but you have to think of it like a sine wave. You have to go backwards in order to be able to go forwards. You have to consolidate in order to be able to regroup and make bigger gains. So it's okay to have that number or these numbers now be lower than your peak numbers. Okay, I'm going to use myself as an example. I was working off a peak fitness pre-COVID of an FTP of about 285 watts. I've done my first couple of sessions on the bike on Zwift, and I've got to say, I've been loving getting back on it. It's the first bike training that I've personally done since January of this year. So we've got our Oxygenetic Triathlon Power Hour on Zwift, 7:15 p.m. UK time. So get on there. Come and join us. Come and ride with us. I've done a couple of these. I was not able to hit 200 watts in the first threshold session, supposedly, of the year. I knew my numbers were going to be down. I haven't done a baseline test yet. I want to do 4 weeks worth of riding before I get anywhere near a test. But I couldn't even see the number 200. And I was so demoralized halfway through that. I knew that it was going to be like that. But knowing it doesn't mean it's not going to feel any worse. So potentially I was thinking, you're 90 watts down. You know, that's almost a third of your FTP gone. I know it's going to come back, but it was a hard session, and it was mentally very demoralizing. Come back this week, and even after a week of, what have I done? I think I've done one other ride where I just went for a ride around the streets for about an hour and a half. So it wasn't an interval session, but I'm starting to feel more like a rider. This week, I was consistently over 200 watts. The number was more like 210 for a lot of the time. So I can feel that my legs are returning a little bit. So it's important to give yourself a couple of weeks before you do these baseline tests. Okay, so if you're one of those athletes listening who's done your baseline tests and you are 5% down, 10% down, that is okay. It's completely normal. It's what I'd expect to see at this time of year. Those numbers are going to come back really quickly. You're going to start feeling much stronger bike fitness really quickly. And it's going to be really positive as the weeks go by. But I think you have to give yourself that freedom to take a step backwards in order to take two steps forward. And I'm right there with you, suffering guys. Okay. Now, that being said, we're in the interesting position where we've had athletes join us all the way through the year. Some of our athletes have joined us, you know, maybe July, August time. They've maybe not had any races. They've done some structured training maybe for the first time. These are the athletes that are going to be making consistent gains, even with me making them take some downtime at the end of the season so they're ready for this winter block. Their fitness has moved on a lot since the initial tests they've done back in August or the end of August or the start of September. So there's some people I want to give some shout outs to for improved performances. There's also some people I want to give shout outs to just because I think they've done really well in different ways. So first up, Steve Davison joined us in August, so about 3 months ago. His FTP in this test was up to 228 from 188, so a 40-watt gain on his FTP. It's nearly a 20% increase in 3 months. So cracking work there, Steve. His 400-meter swim time has reduced from 806 down to 736, and his 10K time has come down from 52.40 down to 47.40, so a 5-minute gain in his 10K time in 3 months. Absolutely brilliant performances from the consistency of training. So keep that up, Steve. There's even more to come. Tim Mennell joined us, and in the 4 months since we've done some testing, Tim's from a rugby background. He's a really good semi-pro rugby player, really big, powerful athlete. His FTP's gone from 250 in July to 282. And I'm telling you, there's more to come there. He's going to be over 300 by the end of the winter. His CSS on the swim has come down from 226 per 100 to 209 per 100. So, you know, 17 seconds per 100 increase in his CSS time. Amazing. And his threshold pace on the run has come down to 5:55 per kilometer. So you're going to be under that 60-minute 10K next time, Tim. I can feel it. Awesome work. Shout outs to Andy Morrison. Andy had a hideous bike crash during the summer, broke his collarbone. He's been really patient with his comeback, and he completed his first ultra marathon this weekend. And, you know, it was a painful day out there, as all ultras are. But he said, who knew you could get DOMS in your biceps even? So great work, Andy. I'm pleased to see that you're sort of back into shape and training in all the disciplines now. Well done for being so patient. John Knutson and Nick Pocock raced in a 10K over in Minnesota. Nick was in the top 10 overall. John Knutson took third overall, so a podium there. Cracking performance, chaps. Kath Maguire, new FTP up to 164 watts. That's up 4%. And she ran her best 10K since 2017. Brilliant stuff. Pat Hackett took second place in her age group in a trail half marathon. Emma Catlow has been really struggling with illness, and I was really pleased to see that she's been super kind to herself. She's a super driven athlete, and sometimes athletes need a kick up the backside to get going. Sometimes they need a set of reins putting on them to hold them back. And for Emma, the challenge has been resting when she's not been well, and she's done a really good job of, you know, really resting up, really getting extra sleep, even taking some extra time off work when she really, really needed it and didn't want to. So I'm so glad that you managed to have some extra downtime, Emma. And I want to recognize the recovery from illness being a thing that's as important as doing the hard training when you're capable of it. So well done. And finally, a shout out to Tim Moore. Tim's FTP has gone up 4 watts up to 264. 400 time has come down from 836 down to 823. Really getting back into the groove of the consistent training, Tim. And I'm dead proud of you for those changes you've made over the last few months. Keep it up, buddy. It's really great to see those improvements happening, and they're going to keep happening with your consistent training. All right, guys, I need to wrap that up here. Thanks very much for listening. Remember, you can, what have we got? We've got some discount deals and codes for you to use over at precisionhydration.com. You can use the code OXYGENETIC15 for 15% off your first electrolyte order. And if you're interested in some triathlon coaching to take you through to next season, there's a link in the show notes to book a call with me to talk through where you're at, if you'd be a good fit for coaching with the team. I'd love to talk with you and see if we can help you out and get you some of the kind of gains that the athletes have had that we've been working with. If you feel like you're ready for a bit of structured training and you'd benefit from our approach, please just give us a ring, have a chat through. Me and Andy will talk through what we do in detail, find out about you, and find out how we think we could help you best. So until next week, have a great, safe training and racing week. I'm Coach Rob Wilby, and you've been listening to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. See ya.